Welcome to the Gnostic Waves, where we're sending out waves of mysticism, philosophy and spirituality every week, Tuesday, 6:30 p.m. My name's Diana, the host of this show, and if you listen to this show on a weekly basis, you'll notice that that intro music's a bit different, a bit dramatic, I say. That was Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, the first movement. Because tonight is the first show of the year, or the first show ever, really, focusing on the pillar of art. Actually, that's not true, because when we reviewed The Matrix, Matrix being a movie is a form of art. This is the first sort of review of a musician. Slash master. And, you know, that we've discussed in past shows the importance of art. It's very helpful for us to connect with our emotional center. So art is very good at just going straight for the emotions, stimulating them. But particularly what we want is the transcendental form of art, the art that helps us to connect with our higher emotions. So there's lots of art forms that connect us with our lower emotions in our subconscious. And there's lots of examples of that in modern media. But we want to connect with the higher emotions, the superior emotions, and thus the most elevated and sublime parts of who we are, of our divinity. So that is the aim in understanding and working using the pillar of art. So tonight I'm going to do a review of the famous German composer that we probably have all heard about, Ludwig van Beethoven. Now his being, or his divinity, is said to be a master in the causal world, or we could say an adept. But anyways, I'll go into that a bit later on in the show. Firstly, I wanted to do a review of the life of this musician, Ludwig van Beethoven, who is most commonly known as Beethoven. So he was baptized on December 17th, 1770, in Bonn, Germany. His father was a singer and an alcoholic. His mother was said to be a gentle, moralistic type of lady. And it's said that his mother was his best friend, so he had a good relationship with her. Not so much with the father. It's said that sometime between the births of his two younger brothers, Beethoven's father began to teach him music, you know, as he was a musician himself. But he did it with an extraordinary rigor and brutality that affected and, I suppose, left a trauma on him for the rest of his life. The neighbours have provided accounts of hearing the small boy weeping while he played the clavier, which I understand is a harpsichord. And he would be standing atop a footstool to reach the keys at a very young age, his father beating him for each hesitation or mistake. So on a nearly daily basis, Beethoven was flogged, locked in the cellar, and deprived of sleep for extra hours of practice. His father realised that he had some talent as a musician, and he wanted him to be the next prodigy. Apparently Mozart, who we'll also review in future shows, he debuted at a very young age, at six, and his father was trying to do the same for Beethoven. He actually went and did a performance when he was seven and a half. His father told everyone he was six. And whilst he played well, his career didn't take off. He wasn't noticed at that stage. But his true calling came in 1779, so he would have been 9 years old, still very young. And he came into contact with an organist, Christian Gottlob Neef, who really helped him as a teacher and mentor, more in a positive way. He recognised his talent and was able to help him to grow and expand as a musician. Now, so he continues on in his work, goes to Vienna, comes back to Germany and eventually ends up in Vienna. At the turn of the century, so in the 1800s, Beethoven starts to realise he's struggling to hear words that are spoken to him in conversation with people. So he realises he's going deaf. And then by 1815, he goes completely deaf. And for a musician, a performer, so at this stage he is mainly performing his music and becoming quite popular. So it's not a good turn of events for him. And he reveals in quite a heart-wrenching letter, he writes, I must confess that I lead a miserable life. For almost 2 years I have ceased to attend any social functions just because I find it impossible to say to people, I'm deaf. If I had any other profession, I might be able to cope with my infirmity, but in my profession it is a terrible handicap. So we see already his life is not an easy one, and then he has this condition, this handicap, and he's struggling because socially a lot of his work is not just in the performing, but it's in the socializing and in the networking. As yes, in those times you had to be commissioned to receive an income for your music. Anyways, so in another letter or like a testament, I don't think he actually sends this one to anyone, but it was found in his records. It says, so in 1802, oh, you men who think or say that I am malevolent, stubborn or misanthropic, how greatly do you wrong me? You do not know the secret cause which makes me seem that way to you, and I would have ended my life. It was only my art that held me back. Ah, it seemed impossible to leave the world until I had brought forth all that I felt was within me. So there, he's suffering, but he realizes his music he's got a duty to fulfill in his role as a musician, and so that's what keeps him going. He's really making the sacrifice to do that, the will of his being, you could say. So in other aspects of his personal life, it's said that he never married and he never had children. He did have romances, and he was in love with a lady that he couldn't be with, and there's various accounts of who that lady could have been, because he had lots of students and pupils, and he was very much in the circles, the higher circles in Vienna. And there's nothing really definitive there. And obviously when you're researching, you have to be conscientious of the accuracy of the data. But anyways, so he had two brothers. One of them passed away in 1815, called Caspar. And this sparked one of the greatest trials of his life, which was a painful legal battle with his sister-in-law over the custody of his nephew, so his brother's son. And from what I've read, the sister-in-law was a bit questionable in her morals and her way of living, her lifestyle. So this struggle for custody of Karl, the nephew, went on for 7 years, and both sides threw ugly defamations at each other. In the end, Beethoven won the boy's custody, but hardly his affection. So I don't think he really appreciated the being sort of torn in between two places or two hearts. And I did read that he did try and commit suicide. He didn't succeed, but he was an unhappy boy. So somehow, despite his tumultuous personal life, the trials he went through, the difficulties, his physical infirmity and complete deafness, Beethoven composed his greatest music. Perhaps the greatest music ever that he composed was towards the end of his life, so when he was probably suffering the most. And then he died on March 26, 1820. 27 at the age of 56. An autopsy revealed the immediate cause of death was post-hepatic cirrhosis of the liver. And there's the deafness was meant to be attributed to having contracted typhus. So there you go. Now I'm going to go to a music break, and this music piece obviously is Beethoven. It's called the Moonlight Sonata, and it's one of my very favourite pieces of music, and I've wanted an excuse to play it. I'm not sure why I haven't before, but it's quite a long bit. It's 15 minutes, but I'm going to break it up because it's in three movements. So I'm going to play the first movement, and then I'll keep talking, and then the second, and then the third. And hopefully we have time for a practice. Okay, so we'll be back to continue on the topic of Beethoven, of the Moonlight Sonata by Beethoven, or composed by Beethoven. It's also, well, its original name was Quasi Una Fantasia. Okay, so I just gave an overview of the life of Beethoven, or at least the life that is most commonly represented from his, you know, his letters and, you know, the things that were left behind after he passed. So Beethoven, the musician, was incredibly talented, and he was one of the first of the musicians of that time, or composers, that was actually given a salary, or he was like given an allowance, and, you know, or paid to commission to write pieces, whilst most or all the musicians of that time, even the really famous ones, were paid to, like a worker. So within a household, they were paid to be the musician, like a court musician, or like for a royal family to have their own musician there, whilst Beethoven was one of the first to have the independence, autonomy, to be able to write, perform, write and compose things for that he felt, you know, to express himself more freely. And we see that for his time, it was very revolutionary in some of the compositions that he came up with, and some that even the musicians, some things he composed the musicians didn't actually know how to play. That was quite profound. So he was very popular and well known at the time. And so, as for his character, his personal character, there was quite a large paradox of his character, his personality. And someone posed the question, how such a man that can produce such sublime music could also be such an explosive, violent, temperamental and disagreeable person. And there is an author of a book called Beethoven and the Spiritual Path, which I will quote more from later. The author is David Tame. He explains that he attributes this to Beethoven being a Sagittarius, and Sagittarians are the element is fire, so they're a fire sign, which means they're quite prone to, you know, bursts of fiery activity, perhaps, that we see as quite explosive. And also Sagittarians, they're shooting proverbial arrows. If we're familiar with the symbols, the centaur with the bow and arrow, so they're always putting their foot in things, and so that can also cause disagreements, especially in a very quite high aristocratic type of society. It was said that he was often in disagreement with one or another person, but, you know, because he was such a talented musician, that it, you know, they never lasted. It was quite, you know, just very short term. And, you know, from what I understand of the Sagittarian personality, they're just like quite short outbursts at times. The other point is that he was on the initiatic path, and when we're on that path, we're getting tested left, right and centre. And so to have this vision or this record that he at times was quite disagreeable provides that evidence that he was actually going through some trials. Perhaps he wasn't overcoming them or processing them as best as he could, but all the initiates, all the sages, all the masters that have walked this path have gone through similar tests in difficult circumstances. And so it's something interesting to reflect on. Now I want to talk about Beethoven the Initiate. Now, what we read, what I was reading on the internet about Beethoven doesn't offer much information on his spiritual path as an initiate. We know from what the Master Samael says, and Master Samael is the founder of the modern Gnostic movement. He writes that in the world of natural causes, which is the causal world, one of our inner dimensions, one finds many bodhisattvas who work under the direction of their real being. So bodhisattvas are those who have reached a certain stage of their work, inner work. So he says, in that world, music predominates sound. Each one who reaches the fifth initiation of fire becomes an adept and has permission to enter the world of music. Here is to be found the temple of the music of the spheres. We know that Pythagoras talks about the music of the spheres. It's a very interesting teachings, and hope to go through them on another show. I continue. One of the guardians of the aforementioned temple is a great master who, when he lived in the physical world, was called Beethoven. He is a great initiate. His nine symphonies are marvelous. Okay, so Beethoven was the physical vehicle. The master was the master, our inner being, is separate somewhat to our physical vehicle. So what he's saying is that Beethoven was an initiate on the path, and he's being reached mastery, which is up to the fifth initiation of fire. Everyone who reaches this region has to learn the fundamental notions of music, because it is the verb. In that sublime region, the music of the spheres is heard. So there you go. He talks quite a bit about Beethoven. I'll read a bit more of what he says. Beethoven's music is especially extraordinary because it makes the superior emotional center vibrate intensely. The sincere Gnostic finds in it a vast field for mystical exploration, for it is not music of the form, but of archetype, ineffable ideas. Every note has a meaning. Every pause is a superior emotion. Beethoven, when feeling the cruel rigors and trials of the spiritual night, instead of failing, as many candidates did, opened his eyes of his intuition to the mysterious supernatural, the spiritual side of nature. Observe the musician philosopher all along his exemplary existence. On top of his table, he always had in plain view his divine mother Kundalini, so like a little statue sculpture. It is said that the great master had an inscription at the base of the sculpture written in his own hand. And this is the quote for the Divine Mother. I am she who has been, is, and will be. No mortal has lifted my veil. So we can see, this is all what the Master Samael has written about Beethoven, is that he was very much connected or believed, relied on his Divine Mother Kundalini. And it's interesting because it said that his own mother, his own physical mother, was like his best friend. So he obviously had a strong connection with the Divine Feminine, both in his mother and in his own Divine Mother. And so those nine symphonies actually are something that reflect the nine Sephiroth of the Kabbalah, the Tree of Life, and that's something that we can't really go into on this show, but perhaps another time. Or if we have access to those symphonies, we could listen to them and really try and connect to what that being is trying to teach us or teach our consciousness. Which, so he had spiritual connection and insight. So Beethoven, as we know, as we read, went through a lot of suffering in his life, but he also had a lot of triumphs. And this is definitely the hallmark of someone on the path, an initiate or adept, as Beethoven was, the trials, the tribulations, the things, the paying of karma, all these things. But then through triumphing, the trials, he was able to fulfill his mission, his purpose in life, to be able to compose this music that has lasted for many, since the 1800s or late 1700s. And hopefully we'll continue to be listened to and appreciated. So it's another extract from the book by David Tame. So Beethoven and the Spiritual Path writes, so despite his temper, his sad and solitary social life, the loss of his immortal beloved, which was, it's interesting because it says that it was the lady that he loved but couldn't be with. And I reflect on that and his connection with his divine mother. But anyways, that's an aside. And most seriously, his growing and profound deafness. There were many other insights from Beethoven's own writings that he felt he had a destiny. So now this is from his own hand. I would have ended my life. The only thing that held me back was my art. So we're really lucky that he didn't end his life and was able to express and do his will. Also that he aspired to serve God. So he writes, Almighty God, you see into my heart and you know that it is filled with love for humanity and a desire to do good. And that his lifetime was of, and that this lifetime was a process for Beethoven, on his path. So he writes, ever since my childhood, my heart and soul have been imbued with a tender feeling of goodwill, and I have always been inclined to accomplish great things. So it's interesting because there were people that, saw him in a negative light and probably, overlooked it because he was, because of his profound music. But within himself, you can see how someone can be quite disagreeable on the outside, but inside they really have good intentions, like they really want to serve humanity and to do good and to help. And, he probably had many moments of complaining to his God as well about why he had to suffer deafness and couldn't perform. And he probably, if he didn't get over that trial, he could have just given up and just stopped composing. And he did his best compositions when he couldn't hear anything, which is really quite profound and shows that he did have that connection to, with his divinity, to be able to overcome and to connect intuitively with the music and, the music of the spheres, which the Master Samael talks about. Okay, so I want to play the second part of the movement, which is a couple of minutes. So just while I get this ready. Okay, and we're back. That was the second movement of Moonlight Sonata. All right, now in this third part, I wanted to look at further at Beethoven as an initiate on a spiritual path, because most of the information that the Master Samael provided wasn't much. It was just that he was an initiate. He's being in the causal world, in the Temple of Music, which makes sense given what his vehicle did in the physical world, and also how profound and sublime his music is. But I wanted to find more information on that. So in my research, I came across a few references, and so it was like forming a synthesis of these different authors. And it's interesting because the three main sources, one of them, the J.W.N. Sullivan, who was more like a scientist. He was a science writer. Sound like a very interesting guy. He wrote, I can't remember the book that he wrote, Beethoven and Spirituality or something like that. The other one was David Tame, who actually wasn't a theosophist, but his book was published by the Theosophical Publishing House, so he must have had some affiliations there. And then the third one was Beethoven's Nine Symphonies Correlated with the Nine Spiritual Mysteries, written in 1971 by Carone Helene. And she was affiliated with Max Heindel and Rosicrucianism, which is similar to theosophy, but, different, sort of around the same time. And so my synthesis of what I could find on the internet of these authors is that most people that hear Beethoven's music, they recognize there's something special, something sublime, dignifying, edifying, transcendental, uplifting, whether they're a believer or not in the spiritual world, life. Even it's a report like someone was an atheist in a group forum, and they said, there was definitely something of his music that makes you connect with like the higher parts of yourself. And then a couple of reviewers termed his work as very ethical. And when they were questioned more about it, because, ethical can mean a lot of different things. But what's interesting is ethics are really what come from our being. So our highest moral, our highest principles are ethics, whilst morals are more like rules and structures, which, we need rules. But ethics, when we get caught in morals, we don't really ever budge or grow or, expand. We just rely on rules and moral codes and never question them and never, outgrow them. Because morals are of time and of culture and personality, but ethics are more dynamic. They're more, they're closer to our true reality and purpose. So there was an article written called Beethoven, Spirituality and Spiritualism in the 20th Century, England and America. And so this is where I got this good synopsis or review on the literature out there. So one of the quotes from one of the, reviewers of Beethoven's music was this: "It is a matter of historical fact that Beethoven, more than any other musician, brought about that religious attitude towards music in general, which has been prevalent for half a century or more in Teutonic and Anglo-Saxon countries. It's also said that Beethoven's suffering is the key to his spirituality." So there's all these reports or people writing that, his music is quite spiritual, religious, all these great words. But, one of the key factors is that he went through a lot of suffering, a lot of trials. So as his life unfolded and his suffering increased, as mentioned, the deafness, the loneliness, he became like retreated himself from society, obviously because he couldn't communicate, and perhaps in those times they didn't have the sign language and you know, things to help people deaf. I'm not sure on that one, but I'm assuming so. But despite this, he deepened. His music deepened and became more spiritual, well, as people have reviewed it and, you know, have noticed that the difference. So there's lots of people out there who know all of Beethoven's work and are able to, like, track the changes in the composition of his music based on his own path and his own tests and trials and his ability to overcome them, which is the main evidence, is that his music towards the end of his life was the most profound and deep and still, you know, still impacts us this day and age. As we think of the music nowadays, you know, are we going to still be listening to them in, you know, 200 years time? I can't imagine it. Although a lot of the music these days is very catchy, you know, it gets stuck in the head, so perhaps it might last by those merits alone, but, you know, it's hard to believe because, you know, the music just seems so superficial these days. So Beethoven and the Spiritual Path, so the book by David Tame. So I've got a couple of really interesting quotes from that book, which I wanted to share. So it says, Beethoven's music is capable of revolutionizing our consciousness. It uplifts our spiritual centers, our chakras, and even to some extent, lastingly transforms who we are. So in the music of Beethoven exists the consciousness of God, which the listener absorbs. So we're not consciously realizing that we're connecting with divinity, or at least Beethoven, whilst he was composing, was connecting with his divinity. So through his connection, we also become connected. We may not realize it, but something in our consciousness, you know, lights up, sparks up when we hear the music, and then we realize there's something that's more elevated in the notes, as the Master Samael, in each note, in each pause, there exists teachings or some mystery there. So also, this is a really interesting quote I wanted to talk about. It says, the wisest of sages and philosophers have known that music is among the most potent of all means through which the human consciousness is altered, for better or for worse, according to the music. It may be that a civilization can rise no higher than the spiritual and moral level of his music. And it's something that I've definitely heard before, is that you can measure a culture or a civilization by their arts. And, so if you look at what is modern art, then, how do I say this nicely? We, as a civilization, become limited by our art. So when the things we hear in the radio, on the television, the movies, all of these things are a reflection of our society and of our civilization. And yeah, it seems to have become less spiritual, a bit more degraded. Even the architecture we see, if you go along North Terrace in Adelaide, there's like, you know, beautiful old buildings there, which are really like beautiful, pleasing to look at. And you look at like more of the modern buildings, or, you know, the skyscrapers or whatever, you know, it's just not as pleasant. So, yeah, there's definitely some modern art that is, you know, it's not all degenerated, but, you know, we start to listen to some words of songs and we realize that, yes, this is a reflection of our society. So just something to think about there. Okay, so I want to play the last part, which is the most exciting of the movements of this sonata. So that was the third movement of Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. And hopefully you got enjoyed that as much as I did. You can see why he was such a revolutionary of his time. You know, that piece is just really, I always call it the techno of classical music. And I mean, anyone that is on the spiritual path is essentially a revolutionary. They're working to connect and incarnate the forces of their being, of their divinity, and going against the current, going against the flow of mechanicity. So you can definitely tell that by that particular piece. Now, I'm not going to get time to do a practice today, but your practice can be homework. And what I was going to play is Beethoven's, the first movement of the Ninth Symphony, which I actually opened the show with. And, you know, if you don't have access to that, you can always listen to it on YouTube. And to really just listen and meditate to it. It's about a 17-minute piece. It's not the most relaxing of music. I know there's many different types of music that are more relaxing, but this is quite, you know, dramatic. But it's more to listen, to allow our consciousness to be impacted by it, to really connect with our own higher emotions through what Beethoven went through when he was writing those compositions, to really connect with our spirituality. Now, what I did want to talk a bit about, because I just mentioned it very briefly, was this spiritual night that Beethoven went through. So when I read the quote from the Master Samael, it said, "Beethoven, when feeling the cruel rigors and trials of the spiritual night, instead of failing as many candidates did, open the eyes of his intuition." Now, this spiritual night is something that all people in the path go through. It's not all going to be roses and bunnies, fluffy bunnies. There are times when there is like no light, and you know, we might not have any inspiration. We might not have any experiences. Like perhaps we often have dreams that guide us or show us something, and you know, that all goes. We're just dreaming about, you know, normal nonsense, or just repeating the day, or dreaming about, you know, things of fantasy. Also during the spiritual night, our meditations are really, really suffering. We don't feel that connection. And, you know, these are the really tough times. And as the Master Samael says, normally, you know, people just give up, or they say, oh, the being doesn't exist. Divinity doesn't exist. It's all fast. You know, someone made it up, some really charismatic guy or people group makes up these things. You know, we can have all kinds of doubts and skepticisms. So these are what happens through a spiritual night, but we just need to continue on, because these are it's part of the process. It's part of the tests. And it also could be our karma that we have to pay off, because, you know, to receive the knowledge and the wisdom and the light of this, spiritual path, it doesn't come for nothing. And you know, it's like, I think the more we have to work for it, the more we're going to appreciate it and respect it. But if we're not prepared for these night, not having any light, then we might get discouraged and dismayed, and you know, look elsewhere. But yeah, it's something that we all go through. And in the last few minutes, or let's say 2 minutes, I just wanted to talk about the author Helene, who was, influenced by the Rosicrucian teachings. And she said that Beethoven's music was not the creation of a human mind, but rather music from outer space, celestial music, music which Beethoven brought down to earth and translated for human hearing. So the definite mission of Beethoven was to serve as a messenger of cosmic music. Now that's a really beautiful way to describe the mission of his being, which he himself knew he had a mission, he had a talent, and that despite, you know, if he didn't overcome those challenges and those spiritual darkness, that spiritual period of darkness, we wouldn't have the music to enjoy now. And each of the masters that have given or done something for humanity had to go through trials to get there. And so there's all these people that have done all this work to help us, and we're just not even aware of it. I think it's until we try and do the same for other people that we might have a real sincere wish to do and help humanity, and then we realize it's actually really difficult. And it doesn't, like, we might think that people should be helping us or people should understand that we're trying to be helpful, but it doesn't actually work that way. But we have to keep going anyway, because it's part of the path. And the fruits, the results of that labor are, you know, come as they do and should, in accordance with the ray of our being. So for Beethoven, he was obviously of the ray of music or art, and he was able to fulfill that purpose. Who knows where that bodhisattva is right now, whether he is continuing on that direct path in another body or what. So I don't have any other information on that. Okay. Yeah, so there's just very quickly, so there's the nine symphonies are meant to be quite profound in their spiritual message, but there's also other pieces, the Eroica, which is actually the third symphony, and his late string quartets have also been documented as being quite profound too. Okay, well, I'm going to leave it at that for tonight. I think I've covered a lot of information. So yes, please do find a Beethoven track. If you don't have any handy, then go for the Symphony Number 9, the first movement. And thanks for tuning in. And hope to see you, well, not that I'll see you, but hope you can join me next week on the show. So next week is going to be Scott Billings, and he's mainly going to be doing a practice on working to understand the ego in our psychology and to actually work to, to how to work on it, which is going to make up for the lack of practice for tonight. Okay, so I'm going to leave you with a bit of a track from the Ninth Symphony, and it's quite a familiar part, so I won't introduce it. Anyways, have a good evening.